Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, the Weekly Comic Book Podcast, hosted from King's Comics live in Sydney. I don't know, I'm messing up all the things that I meant to say at the start. My name's Siobhan Levins. Her name is Andrew Coombs. And every week we read all of the week before last's comics, apparently, because it's January. We're holidaying. Some of you are holidaying, I assume.
Yeah.
It's impossible to keep up with all these comics. Anyway, my name's Levins.
My name's Siobhan.
We read the comics. That's all you need to know.
We tried to read the comics.
We tried to read the comics. And all the comics that you're about to hear us talk about on this episode, you can find at King's Comics in Sydney, which is 310 Pitt Street. Or you can find them online at kingscomics.com. That's pretty much every single issue we talk about. All the trades we talk about in our Patreon bonus episodes. One just went up just after Christmas. All of the graphic novels that we've read over the last month or so, you can find our Patreon page at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast for bonus cool stuff.
Sorry, speaking of trade paperbacks, Kings has a massive sale on trades at the moment.
There's
amazing stuff. Really, really good. Manga, loads of Marvel trades. It's well worth checking out. There's a big clearance tab on the website.
Heaps of good Dark Horse stuff. I was just rifling through that too.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
There's some stuff that I was really, really shocked was on sale. I was like, wow, we shouldn't. This is worth money. This is good.
It's the Bible. Why don't they even sell the Bible here? Why is it for sale? On today's episode, we are going to be starting the same way we start every episode, and that is by reviewing all of the week before last's number ones. We're 1 week behind. Eventually, by the end of the month, we'll have caught up.
Yes.
Just got to bear with us a little bit while we try and fit comic book reading around holiday time with our families.
Yeah, stupid families.
I mean, I'm really enjoying these holidays. I spent most of last week submerged in salt water.
That's so nice. And that is how I am spending the rest of this week.
That's awesome.
I am not getting out of the water.
Are you going to introduce Shatterstar to the beach?
Yep, he's had a couple of beach trips. He likes sand, ambivalent about water.
Tilly is the other opposite. She loves just waves just get crashing over her face. And it's hilarious, like how like insanely hungry she is for action and chaos.
Yeah, this is the best.
Next week I'll be in Singapore.
Oh my god!
No, I've never been. If you've got any tips for Singapore, dear listeners, let us know. Particularly ones that have to do with me putting food in my stomach.
Yes,
but also nerdy stuff too. There's some good comic book stores or good like there's like I found like some bizarre like superhero themed restaurants.
Cool.
I'm gonna take Archie too.
Definitely.
Like, that's probably gonna be goofy and the food will definitely suck. But whatever, it'll be like a shitty burger with the bat logo on it.
That's what I want from my life.
Traditional Singaporean heritage Batman burger. Let us know. I'm keen for tips. But enough about our holidays. Let's talk about number ones. There were three in the week that we're talking about. Should I state some comic book podcasts start with the week that these comic books came out?
Oh, yeah.
So this was two Wednesdays ago. Damn, are we still talking about comics that came out last year? We're such has-beens.
Oh, my God.
So these are the books that came out on the 27th of December, 2017.
Old news in this day and age.
Old news, but at least it ain't fake news.
Hey, what?
And that's the only Trump reference you'll get for the entire year on Serious Issues. There are only three number ones during the last week of December, and we're going to review those three books now in a little segment we call First Things First, in which we review all of the number ones. Let's kick things off with one of two Marvel books. This one is called Phoenix Resurrection, and it's the big new X-Men event about the return of Jean Grey. The original Jean Grey, not the other recently returned Jean Grey, who's a young version. This is the old version who died a couple times.
Ugh.
But she's back, and will almost certainly not die this time. This has been written by Matthew Rosenberg with art by Lionel Yu. This is like just a bizarre thing that kind of like, apparently this was something that was pitched by Matt Rosenberg, who was a writer that we quite like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very strange that the Jean Grey series, which is written by Dennis Hopeless, which I was quite enjoying, has been put on hold. And, I guess like the last issue of that was like that version of Jean Grey, like reduced to a skeleton as the Phoenix just destroyed her.
Mm.
So unfortunately, you know, like Dennis Hopeless was hoping to achieve with his run, just seems to have been steamrolled by this, this event. But was it worth it, Siobhan? I read this book a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I know.
Tell me what happened in it.
I'm confused because I read the second issue also. And so I don't think I enjoyed this issue much, but I enjoyed the second issue more.
So it gets better.
I thought so.
Just like being a gay teen.
But this was like a bit of a mess. Like, I don't think this is anywhere close to Lionel Yu's best work. It's real static and it looks kind of rushed, and I don't think the colors do much to improve the situation. There were whole bits that I didn't understand. Like when these kids are like knocked out and floating, they don't even look like they're floating. What's going
on? What about from a story point of view? I can't remember what happened.
Something.
The Phoenix
Kitty Pryde has no personality and is just like boring mum haircut. I'm the boss of the X-Men now.
Yeah,
cool. That's fun for
and
everyone.
And also this iteration of Jubilee is really weird too. Like she just straight up just takes a bite out of someone's neck because she wants to see if they're a vampire or not. I don't know.
And it has nothing to do with the like super cool version of Jubilee that is in the best X-Men series, Generation X, which has also been cancelled. Thanks a lot, Marvel. Something weird stuff's happening and the X-Men are like, I think it's the Phoenix. And so they're going to go investigate. But then there's also like a weird teen or like young adult version of Jean working in a diner.
Teen
and
Gray.
Just weird shit's happening.
Yeah, I didn't get that. It's like this Twin Peaksian kind of other world in which Jean Grey and Scott are both there. Like Cyclops are there. I don't, who knows? It's like a diner thing.
Yeah. So it kind of reminds me of like Pleasant Hill.
Yeah, what's it called? Avengers.
Something. Nick Spencer led into events. Assault. You know what I mean.
Assault on Pleasant Hill?
Yeah, there you go.
What it was?
I don't know.
Something like that.
Might as well.
This was a pretty nothing first issue. But I'm glad to hear that the second issue is better. I have that in a pile right next to us. Apparently, Siobhan is worried that she's mixed up issues from between the weeks.
So it's entirely possible.
What an even more fun thing to add to this already.
Yeah.
Funny episode. Serious issues. We'll be on track by the end of the month, guys. You don't need to worry about living in the past anymore. A weird number one issue to this event that I didn't really want to read to begin with.
Yeah.
But
you know what? I like Matthew Rosenberg a lot.
Me
and
too.
So I'm totally on board. If he somehow gives Jean Grey a personality, then that's fine by me. But at the moment, she's still just boring. I have red hair and everyone loves me.
But I grew to quite like the young version of her.
I know.
And now they're gone. I don't know, whatever. Comic books.
It'd be cool if she had like some weird interdimensional time travel thing. What? Like if she was like the Booster Gold.
What if she was Teen Grey by day and then adult Lady Grey? Lady Grey.
Lady
Grey. Lady Grey by night. Teen Grey by day, Lady Grey by night. So you have like Jean Grey by like the night version, adults only, and then
adults only. Just her fucking Wolverine for 12 hours. Terrible.
Until the sun comes up. So also from Marvel this week was a new Star Wars number one.
I didn't read this.
It's called The Storms of Crait. It's a one-shot written by Ben Blacker and Ben Acker.
Oh, I like that.
With art by Mike Mayhew, who I also like. But this is Mike Mayhew doing shitty photo reference-y as hell Star Wars faces that really take you out of the story because it's just
weird.
Because you're like
exactly like Harrison Ford.
Well, you're like, oh, I've seen that exact static image somewhere before,
and then
your mind can't. He's like, you know, was that actually from Star Wars or was that from one of Harrison Ford's many other movies?
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about Air Force One. Was it good?
It was.
Should it be made Lucasfilm canon?
Yes.
What if Han Solo was the president?
That's a world I want to live in.
The Storms of Crait is a story that have you seen The Last Jedi yet?
No, I haven't.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I
and
see
the
it.
Finale is takes place on this like salt planet, and beneath the salt is like these like red kind of crystals.
Cool.
It's this planet that's had like a long out of use rebel base on it.
Cool.
And so they return to it, and this basically tells a story of how it was founded. And of course, it is set in between, I think, episode 3 and 4, 4 and 5, I guess. I don't know. No, actually, maybe 5 and 6. Who knows? I can't remember. I read this a week and a half ago, and I've read many comics since.
So far, this is going well.
Yeah. but it was quite a sweet little story about Luke and Han and Leia coming to Krait for the first time, this really cool salt planet with red beneath it.
Cool.
It's a very striking image, seeing things fly over it and revealing the red beneath the salt. Look, as far as a one-shot goes, like, Mike Mayhew's art is much better than he was forced to do here. Mm. The photo-referencing stuff needs to stop, because all the Star Wars books, like the great Darth Vader series at the moment with the Kamenkoli art, that's great, because it's just him doing cartooning. It's not photo-referencing shit.
Yeah.
Darth Vader wears a helmet. What do you need a photo-reference?
True.
I just wish they would stop doing it. And I feel like it's like a mandated thing that editorial is like, no, they must look exactly like the pictures of them, because how will they know who it is?
It looks weird.
The next one-shot we're getting is a one-shot about the unnamed Benicio del Toro character in The Last Jedi.
Ooh.
Who has a speech impediment. So I love it when they have to, write that into speech bubbles.
What's his speech impediment?
He just kind of like stutters, has a weird kind of tick almost.
Oh, okay, right.
I don't think we need any of these, but I'm going to read them.
Yeah.
Because I'm an idiot.
Nice.
So also on the number one front, we got a first issue from DC that ties into the Dark Knights Metal event. This was called Dark Knights Hawkman Found, and is notable because it is Jeff Lemire's big return to DC after, writing for Marvel for a few years and various other publishers. What was the last thing he wrote for DC would have been the Justice League of America book.
But he
also did Justice League Dark. He did Animal Man. He did Frankenstein, Agents of Shade, which is a secret favorite of mine.
Did he do Green Arrow?
And Green Arrow with Andrea Sorrentino. All really good books, but he hasn't, they were years ago. This is him returning to DC. You would think it would be on a book that was very, very good, that really showed why it's awesome that Lemire is back at DC, but instead we get this. Written by Lemire with art by Brian Hitch, and I can't really fault Brian Hitch's art. This is Brian Hitch doing what I like Brian Hitch doing, and that is drawing and not writing. We also get inks by Kevin Nolan, so that's a great team.
Yeah.
Colors by Alex Sinclair and Jeremiah Skipper.
It's not a bad looking book.
It's a great looking book, but I just found the story to be just very, very generic, pointless. Mm-hmm. Like, this book didn't really need to exist.
Yeah.
It's a strange version, like a slightly off-kilter version of Hawkman to what we've seen before, of him kind of stealing the parts that make him Hawkman, and it kind of getting you up to speed as to what just happened in the last issue of Dark Knights Metal. Are you still reading that event?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I have to.
We're invested enough to finish it out. I don't know. Have you got any thoughts on this?
I mean, it's a 5 out of 10 in terms of Hawkman's hairy chest. Could have done with a lot more hairy chest. I don't like if that's what his wings look like.
He's I'm had not a little shave.
Not much happening. I mean, I guess stuff happened in this, but it's all kind of to do with that weird, like, Scott Snyder-y, ooh, I love animal totems and, like, weird trying to do meta stuff that I don't think heaps works. That's fine.
It is. The first It's Fine of 2018.
Jeff Lemire can do better. We know he can. I feel like this was kind of something they were like, do this quick! And he's probably put more effort into the Terrifics.
Yeah, looking forward to that coming out very soon. So those are the three number ones this week. There's not many next week either. I know because the pile is right next to me. I think there's like fucking 5 Batman books to read for next week.
Yeah, there's a lot of Batman books.
Whatever. It's a big seller. He's the biggest, most famous superhero that ever was. But now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Marvel Image and DC to figure out whether we review Marvel Image or DC next. It's 1 to 2, we read Image. 3 to 4, it's Marvel. 5 to 6, it's DC. And the first number is 4, so Marvel first. And then the second number is 3, so Marvel again.
Great.
And then 3, so Marvel a third time. And finally 1. So Marvel, Image, and then DC is the order we're going to review the books in. Let's kick off with an ode to Bendis. You didn't read either of these books, but I just want to talk about them quickly.
Yeah, cool.
This was Bendis at his most Bendis-y.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, it's not. I don't think it is good. And, I know he's not going through the greatest of times right now, but it's safe to say that he wrote these before he had potential blindness and was stricken to a hospital bed. Our thoughts are with him, and hopefully he gets a speedy recovery.
Absolutely. Doesn't mean he necessarily writes great comics.
He does sometimes, and I feel like he ended 2017 very strongly for me.
Mm-hmm.
In the final year, final week of the year, we got the final issue of Spider-Man 2, and the 595th issue of the Invincible Iron Man. I'll talk about Iron Man very quickly first. This is written by Bendis with great art by Stefano Caselli and Alex Maleev, with colors by Marte Gracia and Alex Maleev. This is still, it's like the coming together of like Riri Williams as Iron Man plus Dr. Doom as whatever mm-hmm. he's doing in the Iron Man suit. And those parts of it are fine. But at the heart of it, you also have this returned bald version of Tony Stark, who since this run began has been like pretty much like lying naked, hairless on the floor, and
great.
People are looking for him. And I think we're like 3 or 4 issues into this run now, and finally, Iron Man sees his mother weeping over his body, who he's like moved into an Iron Man suit, and then she talks to him, and they catch up. He catches up with Mary Jane. And then everyone's there. All the heroes are there. They've come to see him. Guess who else is there? Rhodey's there.
Whoa.
Recently Rhodey deceased
dead?
Rhodey.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, but which means this entire issue was a fucking dream.
Oh,
and this issue ends with Tony Stark still on the floor, hairless. And he's wearing an Iron Man suit now, so he's not naked.
But,
he's not even naked.
He's not even naked. What's the point?
But I just, like, it's just absolutely, like, you know, stretching out this plot point that I just wish we'd move faster. And that is like a very core part of what it is to read a Bendis superhero book, I think. And I can't wait to do that over at DC.
Woo!
Stretch that shit out. But look, I'm enjoying the Doom stuff. And I like that he's brought, like, one of my favorite Bendis characters that he wrote in his Avengers run was the Hood. Mm-hmm. And the Hood is back now.
Oh, cool.
And he's kind of like jumping from Bendis title to Bendis title. And it's pretty enjoyable. But yeah, please get a fucking move on. Tell me what's happening with Tony Stark. It's just getting
old fast.
Yeah, that's right. And over at Spider-Man number 2 and Things That Have Died, this was the second event that brought together Miles Morales and Peter Parker as Spider-Mans. They first did it when they were in separate universes and it was their first meeting together. And it felt like this, oh, wow, this is a cool novelty. Mm. Now they both live in the super same universe and they're finally answering the questions from the first miniseries. But they're like, they live in the same universe. Like, who cares that they're together?
Yeah,
together all the time.
Yeah.
They were together last week in The Avengers, for example. But this issue number 5 was written by Bendis with art by Sarah Pacelli, who I love. She's great.
She's so great.
And Mark Bagley shows up as a penciler on this one. Now, why would Mark Bagley show up on this title for the first time? You know, he's worked with Bendis many, many times, most famously on the Ultimate Spider-Man books. Mm-hmm. And we all know that the Ultimate Universe ended, right? It ended.
Right.
It was the end.
Yeah, there was
no more
of that.
It exploded, and that's the end. We got Miles Morales and his like mum and his best friend were the only surviving members of that universe. Everything else is over.
Yes.
And so this...
And that's how it shall stay forever, right?
Apparently not. In ending this miniseries, Brian Bendis sends this the 616, the older version of Miles Morales. He's looking for a version of his dead girlfriend somewhere in the multiverse, and he gets sent to a universe which is drawn by Mark Bagley, featuring lowercase text. So the Ultimate Universe still exists, and it has its own version of many, many of Marvel's heroes.
Oh, what are you doing, Bendis?
I don't know. Like, will this ever make a return? Hopefully, it won't be written by Bendis.
Yeah.
Maybe this is what they get Hickman back, because I loved Hickman's take on the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, that was way more fun.
But yeah, very, very strange. Like, Riri Williams is a part of this the Ultimate Universe now.
Okay.
And then all of the regular kind of, you know, the Giant Man, the Grey Hulk, Cap, and the Iron Man with the Ultimate Hammer. They're all still around. All your favorites, and they're talking in lowercase word balloons.
That's good.
So yeah, very, very strange. I was not expecting this to go. And it wasn't so much the closure that I was expecting to get of this.
Yeah.
But I was like, I guess you kind of created this universe and you may as well not let it die.
Well,
I mean, don't you want things to die so no one else can fuck with it?
Yes.
That's the opposite of what
Bendis
wants. I
want everything to die.
So a very, very strange end. You know, and we've got, I think we must have like, you know, 10-ish issues of Marvel Comics by Bendis before he moves over to DC for good. So who knows what they're going to be like.
Who knows what he's going to fuck up before he leaves. Just leave it in flames. Peace out.
So we've got a whole bunch of books that Bendis didn't write.
Yay!
And we've been quite enjoying the previous two issues to this one of the new Moon Knight run by Max Bemis.
Called Crazy Runs in the Family.
With art by Jason Burrows, inks by Guillermo Ortega, and colors by Matt Lopez. This started out so strongly by introducing a new villain with an incredible backstory and just making him this really powerful, scary figure. Then in the second issue, they kind of like brought back Bushman, who's like one of, you know, kind of the big Moon Knight adversaries. And it really looked like this was going to be like a really fun, cool, and different run. And then this issue just fucked it all up for me.
Really?
Yeah, I hated this issue.
What?
So this issue, like, for one, they have this really, really fun and exciting character, new character, this new villain that isn't tied to anything besides like a vague link to like, you know, he's the fire to the moonlight according to old like Egyptian god stuff. And then immediately
by Ra.
Now they tie him into Moon Knight's backstory, like by making it so overcomplicated and like he's now like teamed up with Bushman and it turns out that Marlene?
Yeah.
His ex-girlfriend has been seeing one of his split personality guys and had a baby with his split personality.
Yeah, come on, that's great. That's so funny. That really made me laugh.
This issue treated Marlene like absolute shit.
Oh, really? I don't know. I kind of liked it. She was like, she knew, I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was like real silly. I think it looks great.
Art's the best, but yeah.
The voice that they have for Mark Spector, I think is really funny. Like he's so flawed. He's so complicated. And he's like, I know I shouldn't call Marlene. I know I shouldn't. This is a bad idea. And he picks up the phone. And it's like, hey, Marlene. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'd love to come see you. It's just, I'm still...
I'm not going to drop it because of one issue, but this was just not the direction I was hoping or even expected this to take. And Bushman, who is like a long time bad guy for Moon Knight, is like, finally, I can finally get one up on Moon Knight. And I just thought he was just going to kill him or something like that, but instead he like stages this like episode of Jerry Springer in his ex girlfriend's living room. Like, how is that like a game plan? Like, oh, great. I finally have access to this guy who has the power to burn things and like create fire. I know what I'll do. I'll reveal to Moon Knight that he has a daughter.
Yeah, because it's like psychological warface.
Yeah, but why do you need the fire guy? Like, this guy, finally, I have a guy who has the power of Ra. I've also got a picture of a daughter.
I love it. I think it's great. I think it's hilarious. I love this villain. I think he's such a like... It's so silly and like camp and over the top. And I think I enjoy it. Wayne is like sadly shaking his head at me as if I'm some kind
of
moron.
Scott gave you the thumbs up.
Scott agrees with me.
Has been torn in half. Everybody.
I know who I'm backing in a fight. So
they did not turn into Jerry
Spider-Man.
Springer.
Anyway, the colors are incredible. The Judge Mooney. So good. I love it. I love everything
about
this.
That's a really
good
joke, everybody. And Shimon didn't even pay attention.
I'm not even listening to you anymore. I don't take any of your opinions seriously. But I like the conflict between Mark and Jake. I think that's fun.
Yeah, I think the way it deals with his split personalities is really, really good, although potentially problematic, but whatever. Yeah. Comic books. I didn't like the way it treated Marlene, and I don't like this. Like, you also have a daughter.
Yeah, come on, that's hilarious.
Yeah, okay, I'm starting to see Moon the
funny. Now he's going to have to, like, take her to school. Gonna have to teach her to read.
There are so few superheroes. I remember I was like, when we started this podcast, I was like, it's so cool, all the superheroes are dads now.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, god damn it, I just want one superhero that doesn't have a kid. I just want a book to escape my own children with. Let's talk about Thanos issue number 14, written by Donnie Cates with art by Jeff Shaw and colors by Antonio Fabelio. This deals with, Thanos, we all know, has children, has for a long time, but did you know that Thanos is a son?
Wait,
that's not his dad, is it? It's did you know that Thanos has an older version of himself that he's now caught in the reality of?
In a universe in which Thanos wins, in which he is the only remaining thing except for his weird Ghost Rider Herald, who is still, we still don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
The big thing to take from this issue is Thanos' real name was revealed.
Yeah,
I saw
really?
A lot of headlines like Thanos' real name's finally revealed. I'm like, I read the book. I cannot tell you what it is.
Yeah,
was it Hank?
Frank.
Why do we both go to
Francis?
Ank? No, it has to Frank Oz. Frank Oz.
His name is Frank
Oz. He's puppeted by Frank Oz. But this whole issue is about this older, grey-bearded version of Thanos in this universe in which he has won everything except he's lost someone. And that someone is the love of his life, Death. And so...
Yeah. God, it's so funny.
So that's
comics. These two comics made me just like, oh, comics are so silly, and I love them. Like on a dead planet with rivers of blood, Thanos has built a giant, sexy statue of Death, and she's like a sexy woman with big boobs, but then still has a skull face. That's everything I want from a Thanos comic.
Do you reckon skeletons have like a Botox equivalent?
Oh, like a lift, like a bone lift.
You lift up that weird triangle part of your nose.
Shave off little
fragments of.
Yeah,
oh, that's cool.
Get better cheekbones.
I
Where'd she get the tits though? Is the big question.
The skeleton tits. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Skeletons don't have tits.
I'd go to a lot more funerals if they did.
How many do you go to as is?
I go to a surprising number.
Oh, that's real sad.
Yeah, I know.
No jokes there. Anyway, this book's great.
It's really good.
This is my favorite of the two Kate's Marvel books at the moment. I'm still enjoying Strange, but I just enjoy it. I think he took this Thanos book in a direction that I was hoping, a new fun direction.
Yeah, I like how big he's thinking in terms of these books, and he doesn't.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, it's fun.
Real fun. You know what isn't fun?
Tell me more.
The Punisher. Punisher, the Platoon. Issue number 4, written by Garth Ennis, Goran Parlov, and Jordi Belair. Are you still reading this?
No, I just can't deal with it. It's like, I know it's good. It's just, I just don't like
the
comic.
There were some very hard-to-read moments. This dealt with, basically, this is all about, like, the first platoon that Frank Castle served as captain for. Sergeant, sorry. Was he sergeant? No, I don't
whatever.
Know.
Whatever.
I've never served Army everybody.
Thing. Really?
Big surprise. Siobhan goes to heaps of funerals, but I've never served. They're for all of the soldiers that died because they weren't under my watch. This whole series has been, it's set in during Vietnam, and it's about the kind of horrors of war and how methodical Frank Castle was in his thinking even before he was the Punisher. And it's a, you know, Frank, Garth Ennis is at his best, I think, when he's writing a war comic, because he's able to kind of talk about the worst sides of war in a way that is quite confronting, but also entertaining. They're still page turners. This issue kind of dealt with, like, for the first time, we're seeing it from both sides. We're seeing like a general for the Vietnamese army who's, you know, kind of. This isn't his first war either. Mm. And we're seeing kind of what motivates him and how he motivates his troops as well. And then kind of you compare that to the way Frank Castle motivates his troops and relates to and, you know, interacts with various people on his side. And all the while there's a kind of, you know, another kind of Vietnamese soldier that's kind of starting to target his platoon. Mm. It's a really, really good book. And I think it's one that's going to lend itself to being read very well in trade. So if you have heard us kind of talking about this each month and going, ah, shit, I should be reading it, fear not. I think it will definitely read, I think, better in one collection. But I'm still very much enjoying it. It's one of the better Marvel books coming out at the moment for me. What else do you want to talk about? We'll talk about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
Yes, please.
Or just Moon Girl at the moment, because Devil Dinosaur is still stranded on a planet somewhere in space. Get him back. Get him back. Of course he will. This is written, I didn't realize this is now written by Brandon Montclair,
he's always been writing this.
Wasn't it Amy Reader?
They were writing it together.
Okay, sure. Right. But now, Brandon Montclair is the writer of this arc with Aletha E. Martinez on art, colors by Roberto Poggi with Aletha E. Martinez, and colors by the great Tamara Bonvillain.
This is the best, who was it who was originally doing the art on this series? I can't even remember her name.
Was it Rita? I can't remember. It's Rita Montclair Bustos.
Natasha Bustos. So this is the best I've seen someone who's not Natasha Bustos do Moon Girl.
Mm. Yeah, I was a bit worried when I saw her name not on it anymore. But this is really good. This is a really, really fun kind of issue in which Galactus, who is now the Lifebringer, comes to Earth, and Silver Surfer goes out to get... Moon Girl. He requests an audience with Moon Girl. And meanwhile, Ben Grimm, the Thing, is kind of like just, you know, walking out in his old stompy ground of Yancey Street and learning that, you know, that basically people are like, when are the Fantastic Four coming back? And it's a big theme in Marvel right now. I feel like this is a great companion book to the Marvel 2-in-1 thing that Chip Zdarsky's doing. They then get attacked at the end of the issue by a bunch of beings that resemble different Fantastic Four members.
Yeah. It's good fun.
I like this. It's a fun, really, really fun book.
There were some really fun like little visual gags as well. Like there's a bit where Lunella is like, she's like paused, she's thinking, she's like leaving
just
her
like
face.
You did,
she
just
has
then.
Little, yeah.
You have the same face as you were pausing.
She has little ellipses above her head.
Oh, I didn't even notice
that. I
thought
that was really cute and fun. And I like also when Ben Grimm gets arrested at the end and they just put little cuffs over his thumbs because it's too big.
That's great.
Just really cute. Like, this is such a sweet book. It's so funny. Lunella is such a, like, just a legend of a character. I just
great
love
character.
Her. I want to be her friend.
And I love that the letter section in these books is so great because they're so all ages.
Oh,
it's just,
so
or just
sweet.
Always kids sending pictures of themselves dressed up as Lunella or like, just holding the comics. It's great.
And their own little drawings. It's the best.
It's great. It reminds me of like watching Saturday morning cartoons, and at the end you'd see like people would like kids would send in like insane drawings. Like, I could never in my wildest wishes hope to draw as good as those kids.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Then they would win like an entire room's worth of toys.
Yeah. What a life.
I never once wrote into Saturday Disney.
I wrote in a number of times, but was just never good enough to be featured.
Damn. Whose life is more depressing? Let us know. Serious at kingscomics.com. Black Panther. This week we got issue number 168 by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Chris Brouse, Carl Story, Weldon Wong, Matt Miller, and Chris Sotomayor. This is great because it's all about, like, you know, does Black Panther stand with his country, or does he, you know, is he the vigilante-esque hero that you know, it's about like diplomacy.
Is he a king first, or
exactly,
is he an Avenger first?
Exactly. Usually that would be, does he fight for Wakanda or does he fight for the world?
Yeah.
This is entirely Wakanda-based.
Right.
It's like, does everything Black Panther does, is it all considered political?
Ah, that's such an interesting idea.
Yeah. And this is just the way that Coates has really grown all of his characters, especially his mother.
Yes.
So you have her kind of like talking with Dora the Milaje, and who have lost two of their own, AO and the two girls that had their kind of spin-off series. They've been taken hostage by Claw, and they're begging of like Black Panther to come to rescue them, basically. And it's like, well, that will be seen as a political kind of movement against another African nation, all the while, you know, turns out they are going to, you know.
Of course
they are. Yeah. And there's a great moments of action and great moments for
lots of great, like, Manifold moments.
Manifold. And also a new, like, the guy from the Wrecking Crew, who is now, what's his name? The dude who is now a member of the crew.
Yep.
Who's the guy from the Wrecking Crew who wields the big ball on chain?
Not Absorbing Man.
Not. What's his name? Wrecking Crew. Thunderball. He's now a member of Black Panther. Thanks for nothing, everyone, by the way.
Good job, Kings Comics.
Imagine if we just there was an intercom, then we could ask the entire store. Excuse me, everyone. This is Serious Issues. We're just hoping to know what was Peter Parker's girlfriend in 1989, the alternate version of him. But yeah, Black Panther, really, really good. This arc is called Claw Stands Supreme. And as it stands, I've never really read a really great Ulysses Claw story. And this is shaping up to be one, which is great in the lead up to the movie, which I'm very excited for.
Great.
You going to see that one?
Yeah.
Crying Room?
Yep.
Great fun.
Where I just go and cry by myself.
Hey, I should have put this in the Bendis section at the start of this segment because you read it too. Jessica Jones, issue number 15 by Brian Michael Bendis with Michael Gaydos and Matt Hollingsworth on art duties. The Purple Man is back, he can't die, apparently. Even though he gets killed by Jessica Jones at this point, he immediately gets back up. He's like, something happened. And finally, the unthinkable has happened. After taking over the mind of Jessica Jones' child, what's the only worst person that he could take over the mind of? No, not Luke Cage. He's already done that. This time he's taken over the mind of Captain Marvel, Jessica's best friend.
She has a lot of powers.
Yeah. This is an icky arc.
It is an icky arc.
When you, 'cause
he's an icky villain. And I'd like I'm always torn because I'm like, I think you should be able to address things like this in superhero comics, but also it just makes me feel icky and I don't like it.
Well, because he didn't implicitly do all the things that he did in the Netflix series in the comics.
But it's heavily implied.
They go in depth with it in the Alias series.
Yeah.
He like made her watch him have sex with other women and stuff. Like, it's still super icky.
Yeah, it's not
but
good.
Like, you know, when you, in the Netflix series, you know, she pretty much says, you know, you raped me.
Yeah.
And there is like this unspoken, they've brought that version of the character into the comics now, I guess. Yeah. Even though he's purple, actually purple in the comics. Yeah. So I don't know.
Which is better.
It is a bit of a gray or a purple area. Purpley gray area. I also read issue number 14 of The Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, which is I'm reading because it's been written by Jody Hauser.
I should read that.
With art by Nick Roche. And it's just, it's not groundbreaking in any way, shape or form. It's just a very fun superhero book. This time you see, like, they're a family who fight crime. It's Peter Parker, it's Mary Jane and their daughter. And the bulk of this book is seen, this issue is seen from the point of view of MJ as she kind of like, you know, tries to balance the mum life and the superhero life and raising a daughter as a superhero and also as just like a good daughter. And it's a fun and unique little spin on a classic kind of superhero adventure book.
Yeah, cute.
I'm enjoying it.
I read Amazing Spider-Man 793. This is the main Dan Slott series with art by Brian Stegman. This is the Venom Inc. crossover.
That did not look like Stegman Inc.
Yeah, it really doesn't look like a Stegman book in some places, which is odd. I don't know if someone else did. I don't know. Maybe it's the way he's being colored by Brian Reber or... Yeah, hard to say. Anyway, this kind of sucks. Now there's all the gangs are Venoms now.
Yeah, Jim from King's Comics just let me know what like the top 10 ordered books of at King's Comics are.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 out of 10 of them are DC.
Yeah.
Which is not, you know, shouldn't be surprising to most people. Obviously, Batman is always going to be the most ordered.
Yep.
And then you've got your, you know, your big Doomsday Clock event. And then I didn't realize that like things like the Detective Comics is really, really well ordered and that kind of thing. There's only 3 Marvel books in there.
Mm-hmm.
The top one is The Mighty Thor, which I found quite pleasing.
Yeah, that's nice.
Because I love that book. It's a genuinely great book.
Yeah.
And then Star Wars obviously gets in there. It's not really even a Marvel book, is it? No Marvel heroes. And then, Spider-Man just scrapes in. And it is baffling to me. I think, like, I'm not one of these people that's like, that would ever be like, Marvel needs to do this, Marvel needs to do that. Like, so many people on the internet do, but I do think that, like, the biggest thing they need, that needs to be done for them to, like, do wild numbers is to make a really, really accessible Spider-Man book.
Yeah,
and make
totally.
It the only Spider-Man book.
Yeah.
I just think getting rid of Slott is like a, is not even getting rid of him, just taking him off Spider-Man.
Yeah, just give him a break from it, even.
I think
give someone else a go.
Has he hit 100 issues yet? Surely he's 100
Must
issues.
Have. He's been on Spider-Man for
do
so
something,
long.
Like, I loved Silver Surfer so much. And if he could, I'm sure he has other great stories for other Marvel heroes in him, too.
Absolutely. So. And his early Spidey stuff was, like, so great. Like, big time and stuff. That stuff's all amazing. But, yeah, something... I don't know what's going on with Spider-Man at the moment. But it's always going to sell well, just because it's Spider-Man.
Yeah, but it should be in the top 3.
Yeah, should be.
Yeah. Anyway. That's boring sales talk.
Mm.
Finally, from Marvel, I read X-Men Blue, number 18.
Same.
Why did I read this? I don't know.
Boring.
Yep.
Done.
Are we dropping this book?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was finishing, but apparently it's going to continue, and there's going to be like 1 billion X-Men books again.
An X-Men book for every color in the rainbow.
Thank goodness, equality wins.
And then finally they all come together for the event. Roy G. Biv. It's a good joke.
It's good.
It's one of the best.
That's one of the best I've ever heard.
I'm going to drop blue. So I'm going to have a blueless rainbow. It'll be Roy Jiv. Another good joke.
That's good.
Those are our Marvel books. Let's talk about...
Image, right?
Image books, sure. Smallish Image Week this week.
Yeah. I read 3.
But because you enjoyed the first issue of this book so much, I read issue 2 and I quite enjoyed it. I'm talking about Void Trip, written by Ryan O'Sullivan and Plaid Klaus. On art, and this is a big trippy drug voyage through space, and while these like, you know, two parents, so basically like it's a girl who's always eating all kinds of space drugs, and she's just tripping balls. 2 issues now.
Yeah.
And like all the while there's like this kind of robot assassin who I guess is hot and is following them around.
And might be God.
He's killing a bunch of people.
He's implied that he's God, which is pretty funny.
And look, I feel like the plot isn't really important because so many things are revealed to be dream sequences times throughout this book. The art looks wonderful. I had like a problem with the character designs in the first issue because I just thought it was really all over the place. I now realize that's the point. The main designer, that robot, I love too.
Absolutely. And I really like the main female character who is just such a like...
a tripper dude.
Yeah. I just really like her. She's really funny. The panel where she goes, she like walks outside her tent and looks up at the night sky and goes, "Why am I so special?" That really made me laugh. I thought that was good. And there's some really funny like space dude designs and I'm into it. I like this a lot.
Yeah.
Silly as all hell.
It's fun. I'm keep with it. We also got another issue of Underwinter this week. Oh, boy. Ray Fawkes writing the third issue of Underwinter, A Field of Feathers. This is this like weird cerebral kind of horror book with very, very simplistic watercolor paint, like painted kind of or drawn. Like a little bit of both, painted and drawn artwork. From what I can gather, it's very bent, you have to kind of fill in the blanks for yourself, which is fun to do sometimes. But a husband has kind of taken off with his children, while their mother is kind of experiencing either a drug induced like bunch of weird bullshit or a demon induced bunch of weird bullshit.
And probably demon.
There's a whole bunch of like weird demon birds around. It's fucking weird. It's really cool. I'm really enjoying this book.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one to describe or explain. I think you just have to experience it.
Yeah, it's definitely an experience.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it. I would highly recommend this very strange read. Motor Crush issue number 9 came out this week. You missed this one? Yeah, I'm at that point where I get to at the end of every arc of Motor Crush where I'm like, why do I read this book? written by Brendan Fletcher, Cameron Stewart, and Babs Tarr, who also do all the art stuff as well. This is about a girl who has to take weird drugs because she's an alien, and she races.
Oh, is she an alien? Like, is that what it is?
They found her on an alien ship.
Oh, okay,
right?
Yeah. I don't know.
And she races in a motorcycle gang, and if you give the drugs that she has to take to live to the motorbike goes really fast, and so it's an outlawed street drug for your motorbikes. But she goes missing for a bit, and now she's back, and everyone's like, "What the fuck?" And this is like, I don't know. There's too many characters. It's still cool.
It's cool. You know what? It's a little bit style over substance, this book.
Yeah.
So, like, it looks incredible. Like, this is a beautiful book, and Babs Tarr has gone to, like, you know, an insane level of effort to make everything look beautiful and fashionable.
Neon colors. And, yeah.
But the plot is a little bit, like, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, it's fast moving while also being slow.
Yeah.
So weird. It jumps forward a lot. Yeah, I don't know. But the arcs.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Almost over. I'm going to make my decision on whether I keep reading after the end of this arc.
Nice. Was this week or did I catch up on this?
You caught up on this one, but let's talk about it. Redlands, issue number 5.
Ooh, I love this book.
And this is the one that I spoke mostly about the back matter of in our last episode, because the back matter is the very, very sad diary entries.
Oh, my good God.
Which character do you see those entries coming from? Does it implicitly say?
I can't remember.
Is it one of the witches, or is it the girl that's now?
I think it is the girl that is inhabiting the body of one of the witches now.
Yep, cool.
I think that's who it is.
Comic books.
But this is like Geordie. Like there are some women in comics who have such an incredible grasp on horror, like more so than any male writer I've ever read. And maybe it's because they push specific female buttons that it gets to me more. But like. Gail Simone, Geordie Blair, and what's her name who did Through the Woods? I can't think of her name now. But this is like such a good horror comic. It is like terrifying and horrible, and the art is beautiful, and it ticks all my buttons. Emily Carroll. Yeah, I love this book so much.
Yeah, me too. I think it's really, really great. I think the art by Vanessa Del Rey is really, really unique.
Gorgeous.
And cool, and a big part of what makes the overall vibe so creepy.
Yep.
I'm very interested to see what this big threat, this kind of father figure to them that's returning to town is going to be.
He's scary.
He makes someone chop off his own nose.
And then eats it. He says scrumptious. That was good. I liked it a lot.
You know what else is scary? An enormous savage dragon penis coming all over you.
That is terrifying.
And that's what happens in every issue of Savage Dragon now. And I got excited because this one came to me in a sealed section.
we finally started bagging all the issues of Savage Dragon because there's too many dragon dicks, guys.
And even though it came with a Christmas cover in which Dragon is wearing a Christmas sweater.
On his dick.
Does he? No.
No, I'm joking.
Well, I mean, he's actually wearing pants on those.
Not right.
This is a mostly naked issue in which three female superheroes fight their way out of a weird dimension while naked.
Cool.
I don't know why they're naked. Maybe because they've fought till their costumes have burned off. Unfortunately, no disgusting sex stuff in this one.
I'm so sorry.
Just for some reason, naked space battle.
Cool.
I'll keep you posted. Oh, wait. There's a ferociously naked...
With
a very, very detailed vagina.
I respect that. I respect the amount of work that Eric Larson put into that woman's vagina.
Nothing but respect for my Savage Dragon vagina. So that's Savage Dragon update for the month. What you got left?
I also read Glitterbomb, The Fame Game, issue 4. I sort of thought this was a 4-issue arc. Is it a 4-issue arc?
It's only like 5 or 6, isn't it?
It says the end, ? Oh. So this is the end of this arc.
No, it's the end.
In the end, I don't know if this is going to continue with just more people trying to be famous getting taken over by this scary demon monster thing. But this is a cool story. If you like the themes of, you know, Hollywood corrupting and fame corrupting and blah, 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 this is good fun. I like this. I like the characters that they built up. Jim Zub's really good. The art by Jibril Morissette is great. Is extremely good. The colors by K. Michael Russell are great. And this is good.
Cool. Awesome. Those are our image reviews for the week. And now it is time to move over to DC. And we're going to kick off DC with the finale of the Commandy Challenge. Issue number 12 of this 12-issue run in which various DC talent told a story, a one-shot, I guess, in which that ended in a cliffhanger featuring the Jack Kirby creation, Commandy, the last boy on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
This final chapter was written by Gail Simone. With art by Ryan Sook.
But also Jill Thompson does the first 5 pages.
That's right. Yeah,
which
yeah.
I love Jill Thompson.
Yeah, me too.
And I love whoever colored and inked her work. It looks really different for her, but it's great.
The first five pages are a dream sequence featuring Commander, the last girl on Earth. And that was one of those things where I was like, oh, why didn't I think of that? That's such a great
thing.
Yeah,
you're so clever. But Gail Simone's so clever. And she really taps into like things that horrify me. So all the rats come together to make a giant rat.
Yeah, but the rats are the good guys.
I know, but I'm so scared of rats. Okay, I hate them so much. Okay. I'm such a loser. They just freak me out.
I thought she was a great choice for finale here.
Agreed.
Because it's so just it was such a fun read.
Yeah, it really was. I thought that the epilogue with Jack Kirby was like a little bit more on the nose.
I was into it. Written by Paul Levitz with Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, with inks by Joe Prado. Yeah, like, so basically like Jack Kirby kind of becomes this god-like figure.
Which he is.
But like literally in the comic.
Yes.
Kind of dictating to Commandy what he can and can't do and why he can do the things he can does. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very, very silly. Like, you know, in the same way that you loved Moon Knight and Thanos this week because it was so silly.
Yeah.
This was another very, like, this sums up a lot of, like, what I enjoy of you know, Golden and Silver Age comics.
Totally. And it ends with Detective Chimp, which I'm always going to love.
Of course, definitely. And then after that, the finale. This is a great package, this issue.
Yeah.
What's the opposite of a forward? Afterward, of course, is written by Paul Levitz, who wrote the kind of epilogue. And this was actually meant to be written by the recently deceased what's his name?
Len Wein.
And he kind of, so not only would we get like a tribute to Jack Kirby, we also get a tribute to Len Wein, which I thought was really, really sweet and unexpected.
Yeah.
Overall, I think this Commandy challenge was a huge success. And one of the more fun things that we were able to cover throughout the entire year. I think it ended very, very strongly. There were definitely some lulls, but it never got to the point where I was like, this is just bad.
Totally.
I was just like, this issue is a bit of a miss, but it always kind of like... And I feel like there weren't too many creators that did exactly the same thing as well. There were lots of points of difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gail Simone's is up there, like maybe top three
issues
with this one. This one, I think this and Bill Willingham's issue, they were probably my two favorite.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was real fun. And I even really liked the Frank Miller cover.
I didn't realize it was Frank Miller. Cover. Of course you get him to do it. Good on you, Frankie.
Good on you, old man Frank.
I'm bummed that they didn't announce another Commandy challenge for this year off the back of this one, but maybe it didn't sell well.
I would have been surprised if it sold really well, but I think it's such a fun concept and they could do it with so many characters. You could just do this with everyone.
Yeah.
And I would love them to continue this.
Tom King did his issue with the dude from Ninja Turtles doing a DC book for the first time in his life.
Yeah. Like,
that was so cool.
That was cool. If depressing.
Very depressing issue. But it ended in a very undepressing way, which is a word. Also this week we got the second issue of Batman Creature of the Night, which is a four-part... I always forget the name of this format, but I love it.
Prestige
format. Oh, I love a prestige format. prestige format written by Kurt Busiek with art by John Paul Leon.
John Paul Leon is
amazing. We already know, but this is maybe my favorite thing of his, especially the panels that harken back to Golden Age Batman stories. But this is kind of like the sister story to the excellent Kurt Busiek book, Superman Secret Identity. In which a boy with the name of Clark Kent starts manifesting Superman's powers.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of jumps throughout decades of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a boy whose name is loosely Bruce Wayne, who loses his parents and then starts manifesting an actual Batman to fight his crimes for him.
Yeah.
And the first issue was great, but quite sad and depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see Bruce quite like on top of things, like for the most part. Doing well at his business and, you know, feeling like he's fulfilling his end of the bargain in terms of trying to be Batman and make the world a better place.
Absolutely.
While this, you know, literal bat fights, little Batman fights crime kind of for him.
Mm.
But there are other things that this Batman creature does and potentially harms others and other things so Bruce can have a better life. And Bruce realizes that at the end of this issue. I fucking love this series.
Good. Man, it's so good. It's such a fun, like, not fun, but like, it's such a good concept.
This was fun. I thought this was fun.
Yeah. And like, so beautifully executed and like a really interesting idea. I love this.
Yeah, it's like a celebration of Batman in a way you've never really read before.
Absolutely.
Like, as you see this guy who is just, you know,
a huge Batman fan,
and, you know, suffers the same thing that Bruce Wayne suffered, you know, loses his parents, and the way he kind of is still drawn to all the Batman things in his life. And so when he decides to start a charity to help
youths, orphans children,
the first girl he kind of is drawn to is named Robin.
Yeah.
And there's just lots of sweet things like that that like don't make you groan because Busek is that good of a writer.
Absolutely.
And as you mentioned, Jean Paul Leon's art is incredible.
Mm.
This is one of my favorite books coming out right now.
Yeah.
And I'm bummed that it's only two more issues, but like you just know it's going to wrap up really
well. So perfect.
So I think we jump forward 10 years each issue. And meanwhile, the Alfred character is the new level, like, you know, him being gay and that being the reason that he didn't want to raise Bruce himself because all the people in the neighborhood say, you know, this young boy being raised by a gay couple.
Incredible.
Good. Such a good book. What about Doomsday Clock, issue number 2, written by Geoff Johns with art by Gary Frank?
I can't believe there are 12 issues of this. I feel exhausted by this already.
Yeah. At least there's no tie-ins that we know of.
Yeah.
This is the series that brings the Watchmen universe into the DC universe.
Finally. Just what we've all been asking for.
Gary Frank's art is great.
Yes.
And I will say that.
Yes. Gary Frank.
Great colors by Brad Anderson. The best. I don't... like. There are parts of this I like.
Oh, yeah?
I really like the... mime and marionette characters who are meant to kind of mirror Punch and Judy, who were Charleston characters. Same, is it Charleston? The Watchmen characters were influenced by. I think they're cool. That's a cool inclusion. I really, really don't like the least like the characters that I'm used to in this are all the DC characters.
Yeah, what a weird version of Batman.
But is this the regular version of Batman or is this like...
I don't know. Which universe are they in?
And Lex Luthor is really weird too.
It's like they're in like Golden Age? It's set a year in the future. Then why is everything in black and white?
Because the Doomsday Clock, baby.
What?
Wait, what's in black and white?
Isn't it like they're like, oh, some things in this universe are like in the past and some things are in the future or something. Like they're more ahead of us in some ways and behind us in other ways. The timing of this I also don't understand. I wish that there was more like...
Oh, I thought the black and white part was meant to be
descriptive.
Like... That's the past.
I can't remember where it is. Anyway, when they're talking about like movies and stuff at some point, maybe I'm crazy, but I don't understand this. I'm too dumb for this, clearly.
This just kind of like I just there's no event to it. Like I just like I breeze through this and I finished it. And I'm like, huh. Like it ends with old mate the comedian is back and he's alive too and he's hanging out.
He shoots Lex Luthor. Who cares?
No, he shoots Ozymandias. He's aiming for Ozymandias and he shoots Luthor. But like. It's like a hero moment, but this guy's a rapist. I don't care. There are some okay themes. I like you know, Bruce going through a psych test and looking at the ink patterns and you see Rorschach's face pattern be brought up. And this version of Rorschach is now in the Batcave. But so which, I don't know. Look, there are definitely some answers that I want from this series.
Also, someone... I can't remember her name. Someone tweeted the picture of, what's his name? Dr. Manhattan in his stupid little underpants and said, cowards. And I agree. Cowards, DC. Give us nude Dr. Manhattan. If you are really committed to doing this, do it. Do it properly.
Your publishing
give us
name,
a willy.
Your publishing name is two letters away from being dick.
Yes.
Just embrace it and give Dr. Manhattan a big old dick.
But like, give us Lower Manhattan. Thank you, Jim. But just like seriously, come on, DC. You're trying to be like, no, we're grown up. We're all adults here. There's comic books for adults now. Then make it an adult comic book. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. They say
it was
shit
a weak
in it.
Move. Yeah.
Why say shit in it and also not show us a big
it's
old?
Just a body, guys.
Dong.
Everyone's got one.
Everyone's got a dong. Every single person on this on this planet has a dong.
We all
show
have
us
dongs.
Dr. Manhattan. Dong to Manhattan's. Anyway,
sorry.
We're still going to keep reading this. Hopefully, it doesn't become this like pit of negativity every time we read it.
Yeah,
but it probably will.
It probably will because I'm here. But I love Gary Frank. I wanted to see Gary Frank's Dr. Manhattan dong. That's what I was waiting for.
You're like, yes, the perfect artist has been attached to this. Maybe he'll like whip them off.
Maybe cool.
Like, he's like, in order to harness my true power, I need to expose myself.
Oh, dear.
Man, there were a lot of DC comics this week, huh?
They sure were.
We're going to talk about next.
Should we talk about Detective Comics? things?
Yeah, it's a bit of Detective Comics. So this is the big Bat-Vengers team of Batman and Batwoman, and Clayface has been a member of this group, and they've been kind of like, he wants to do good.
Yeah.
And they're working on a cure for
him. It was
obviously
never going to work out.
And so this finally is him being brought back to the most evil Clayface that he can be. Via the Vengeance Society or whatever it is.
The Victim Society.
Victim Society. So now it looks like it's going to be Clayface v. Batman. Otherwise, he starts killing people again.
I'm sad about that.
I quite liked it. I thought, I kind of bummed. I mean, it was always going to get to this, but like, totally. I kind of wish it didn't.
Yeah, totally.
Because surely we've seen these kind of stories before. We've all read a Hulk comic.
We've all read, Riddler becoming good and then being bad again, and just Clayface's arc in this was so sweet. I just wanted him and Cassandra to go off and be friends forever. But
in theater group,
go
to Shakespeare school.
Yeah, go to Shakespeare school. I've heard it's really cool and only cool people do that.
But yeah. Look, this series is good enough that it will be. It'll deliver a pretty satisfying conclusion to this story.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't go full bad. Because at the moment he's still it's not his fault, but then again I don't want it to be this more ammunition that the city can use against Batman, because that shit's boring. Just like if I was in Gotham, I'd embrace Batman.
Yeah,
like it's just part of the scenery. It's
absolutely.
Like it's like donut time.
Yes,
like it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, guys. Pie face and donut time. They're everywhere.
There's less pie faces than there are donut time now. Sure.
Oh really?
In like the greater CBD.
This is good content if you live in Sydney.
Yeah. If not,
we don't care.
See you later. Detective Comics, it's okay. I read The Flash this week.
Oh, yeah? How was
issue
it?
Number 37. I read it because look at that cover.
It's a great cover.
He's saying kneel before, which is a something that Gorilla Grodd would say, except it's...
Or Zod.
Kneel before Zod, you're right. But surely Grodd has said kneel before Grodd, right?
You've got to hope so, right?
Anyway, Captain Cold's on the front and he's saying kneel before Cold. That doesn't work. Now it doesn't work at all. I wish this was Gorilla Grodd. Fuck this comic.
I wish everything was Gorilla Grodd all the time.
But turns out that in sending all of the rogues to prison, Barry Allen has fucked up worse than he ever has before, because they've taken over the prison
The
rogues are living a better life than they've ever lived before.
Oh, no.
So like underneath the prison, they've got all their fortunes and they're plotting to take down Flash once and for all.
This is exactly... I did a podcast for SBS recently, their Batman podcast. I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember any of the details of it.
But just the words.
I don't know why I even brought this up. But this is very similar to the plot of the episode that we talked about. Look it up, guys. You have Google.
Was the Flash in it?
Nope. It was Batman.
Did Batman say kneel before bat?
No, but Shelley Winters was in it.
I want one of Zod saying, you get like superheroes teaching you how to like read.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like instead of saying kneel before God, he's saying I before E.
Yes.
except after seeing and Captain Cold is right there.
Yeah, but that's not even a rule anymore. We don't teach that anymore because
really?
It's wrong.
Well,
more times.
Well, whatever,
it's right.
Whatever the modernization of that. Jeez, political correctness gone mad. Wonder Woman issue 37.
How'd you read it?
I read it because you said it would be good. It wasn't.
It wasn't.
Fuck you, Siobhan.
The end.
I don't know. Zeus is back.
But now dead, probably?
Oh, yeah, he's dead. That's weird, killing a god, like, from another thing. I guess Thor is another thing. Marvel
Thor,
do it all the time.
Thor is another thing.
It's so funny that everyone's like, good on you, DC. You're selling so many more comics because you're just doing what Marvel aren't. It's like, no, they're kind of just doing lots of Marvel things at the moment.
And Marvel still outsells DC just on sheer numbers because they put out so many books.
That's fucked. I wish Marvel would put out less books.
Yeah, agreed. But now, I guess the big takeaway from this book is that Darkseid is no longer a teen.
So, in worst book of the year?
Agreed. I wish he was still a baby.
Or at least a tween.
Yeah.
Darkseid, the tween.
Just having him deal with puberty.
Teen Gray
great.
And Dark Tween, or whatever his name was. I don't know. Action Comics, 994. That's a big number, isn't it?
It is a big number.
Booster Gold and Superman. Booster Gold refusing to let Superman meddle with... the place that he was from, Krypton, because he's gone back to kind of where he came from and he's fucking with the time stream to try and figure out what happened to his father.
Yeah, this is so annoying of
Why?
Superman.
Oh, right, Superman just not getting it.
Yeah, you're Superman, you're supposed to be better and smarter than all of us. And he's like, no, I want to fuck up the time stream.
But he loves his dad.
I know, but that's dumb and annoying.
No, you hate your dad. Everyone knows that.
Oh, I love my dad so much. Can't even joke about it.
But
Dan Juergens' art is pretty good on this. It's pretty Juergensy.
Oh, Juergens did the art on this too?
He did the pencils, but pencils. Then four other people did the ink, so it's a little bit inconsistent.
But, you know, I'm really enjoying from a story point of view. I think this is hitting why I like Action Comics so much. Juergens does a good, fun adventure comic.
I could do more gags. Like, why have Booster Gold in it?
I guess
there's not jokes.
Well, he's trying to save Superman, so I guess he's got to be a little bit serious. But the next one's like the tag for the next issue is Booster's back, or Booster's home. Quick, look busy. So that's a gag.
That's almost a joke.
That's a good sign.
Good.
The Demon, Hell is Earth, issue number 2, written by Andrew Constant.
Australia's own Andrew Constant.
With pencils by Brad Walker, inks by Andrew Hennessy, colors by Chris Sotomayor.
Good colours. Good art.
Colors.
Yeah. I like this.
And this basically is the split of Jason Blood and Etrigan the Demon.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it is like Etrigan inside Jason Blood itching to get out. Now we have Etrigan in full control, but Jason Blood acting as his conscience and not allowing him to do certain things. It's a new take on the character that we've not read before. It allows Etrigan to talk to Jason Blood without rhyming, but whenever he is like publicly Etrigan, he
does some rhyming.
I like how like fucking grim and evil this book gets in parts.
Yes, absolutely.
Just sort of setting fire to a little girl.
With his
breath.
Yes. Yes, that's a good final page. I really like the use of Madame Xanadu. I think it's really like, I really like this book. I think it, you know, goes into some weird corners of the DC universe. And I think that because he has so much like, these characters aren't being used anywhere else. He's got sort of license to do whatever with them.
Yeah, totally.
Blow up a whole town. It's great.
But see, I like this Etrigan. I like this Blood. Yeah, like you said, Xanadu's cool. It looks great. It's a cool book.
It's really good.
I'm on board.
Good job, Andrew Constant.
One of the better DC books I read that during whatever week we read these books. you read a few. I didn't.
I did. You didn't read Nightwing: The New Order?
No, I have to steal this from you and read it now. We can review it in 8 weeks' time or whatever.
I like this less and less as it goes on.
Every week I like this less and less.
It's a good joke from 2008 or whatever.
That's when I read this book.
But it does have a cool, weird, like beardy Superman.
Yep.
That was good.
Okay. So, and he's depowered?
I don't know.
Question mark.
Something.
The end?
Anyway, that's fine. Batgirl also.
How many more issues of that are left? One?
Yes. One more issue.
Right, I'll catch up and we'll read both together.
We'll talk about it properly. I also read Batgirl issue 18, which was like a little one shot where Batgirl fights Harley Quinn.
Yeah, I was going to pick this up and then I saw Harley Quinn. I was like, I don't want to read this.
It was fine.
Hope Larson wrote it.
Yeah, Hope Larson, Chris Wild Goose on art still, right? Wild Goose? No,
Wild,
sorry.
Wild Goose. That's 2017.
It's the only comic.
When I'm with you, all
Sammy Basri
is Wild Goose.
It's Sammy Basri on art, and this is the only comic that I've ever seen that has someone putting on false eyelashes.
Oh, fun.
Cool.
How's Larson's Harley Quinn? Annoying or the same?
She's kind
so
of,
annoying.
She's pretty annoying. She's kind of fine.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was fine.
Teen Titans this week tied into the Super Sons of Tomorrow event that's going on across Superman, Super Sons, and Teen Titans. It's all about the evil future version of Tim Drake, who starts this issue and this event in a bat suit, but he gets a new costume in this one and he's now known as Savior.
Yeah, that's like, everyone's still just going to call you Tim Drake.
Tim Drake from the future, but you're not Batman.
Yeah.
It rolls off the tongue. Written by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason with art by Ed Benes and Jorge Jimenez.
I really like the art on this.
And Richard Friend and colors by Dine Ribeiro and Alejandro Sanchez. Yeah, this is the best looking issue of this event so far, I think.
Yeah.
That's a great team.
Yeah.
This is a very unnecessary event. And
it sure is.
We just found out that they've added another chapter of this, so it's going to go on even longer.
That's what I wanted. Yeah. Yeah, it's fine.
I always
wish that they drew Starfire a little bit, like, when she looks too normal, just with, like, green eyes and orange skin, I wish that they would go, like, more alien with her, like, her eyes. Like, when George Perez did it, her eyes took up, like, half her face and her hair is, like, 20 meters long.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's kind of what I want.
And scales.
She just is, like, a sexy lady.
Like, sparkly scales.
Yeah.
I like Amanda.
And also get her tits out.
I like Amanda Connelly's take on her too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Real good. I like Amanda Connor's take on everything.
But yeah, this is, I don't know, it's like Superboy is apparently going to be doing something boring and evil in the future.
Yeah.
Didn't you not read Civil War 2? It was the worst.
Yes.
Stop doing this, like, stopping, preventing people from making crimes in the future plot.
Yes.
It's boring.
We've all seen Minority Report. My favorite movie.
Is it actually your favorite movie?
It's really up there. I really like Minority Report.
I've only seen it once at the cinema when I was still in high school. I thought it was stupid.
I think about it all the time. I do, because I worked in advertising. I do quite like this. And if it leads to, like, that generation of Teen Titans being back in the main DC universe, I'm on board. I love Connor.
You want Connor?
Always.
Is there anyone from that generation that you don't want?
Nope.
Nope.
Bring
cool.
them all.
Bring them all back.
Bring them all back.
Bring
love
them
Bart
all
Allen.
Back to Siobhan. That was X-Club.
That was good.
Very musical episode today. We're now going to talk about other publishers. I've got a nice little stack of comics that were not put out by DC, Image, or Marvel.
There were some good ones this week.
Some very good ones.
Or 2 weeks ago, whenever this happened.
Whenever the fuck. 2008. Dynamite put out a very good finale to a very good series that we've been enjoying from their Sovereigns imprint. This was Turok, issue number 5, written by Chuck Wendig with art by Alvaro Saraseca. This told the story of, like, a kind of different take, a more on Turok, the dinosaur hunter. I don't guess what his name is, but he's in, like, this, like, parallel dimension that's been taken over by dinosaurs, and they've stolen all the children from Earth, and they're eating all the children from Earth, and he's trying to find his daughter. There's a tragic reveal linked to that.
Very, very devastating.
But best thing about this series is that they've now, this concludes them reintroducing these characters into their imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing we get from the Sovereigns is this big kind of set in the 80s. There's like a preview, a crazy preview at the back of it. Did you read that?
Yeah.
And so now it's like, yeah, it's like Magnus and Dr. Solar, Turok.
No, it's introducing Solar.
Right.
Anyway, whatever.
Dr. Spectre.
Yep.
This is a really, really cool universe. Like, yeah,
I love it, guys.
We've made comparisons to Valiant every time we've talked about it.
But it's kind of almost more self-contained like that. Like, you can read, like, what, 3 different series, and you can be totally across the Sovereigns universe. And it's really good. I don't think there's been one series that I've not enjoyed.
Yeah, totally. So the next one is called, just the Sovereigns. And it ties in all of one. And it's all linked to these golden keys that Turok gets handed one at the end of this issue. I really enjoyed this. I think this was maybe the standout. Magnus is probably still my favorite out of all of them so far. But this is up there too.
It's great.
Art. Alvaro Saraseca is a great get for Dynamite.
Like, absolutely.
Give him all your money, Dynamite.
Agreed.
Have him draw it all. This is a really, really strong end to a great, great miniseries. Highly recommend everyone pick up all the Sovereign stuff, especially if you're a Valiant fan.
Yeah.
Or just a superhero fan.
Absolutely.
We also got the finale to Eugenic, number 3 of 3. You didn't read this.
No, I did. I just didn't realize this was the end. I thought it was just going to continue jumping ahead 100 years at a time and just go on forever.
Well,
I love it.
This is the 3rd of 3 miniseries that are all roughly exploring similar themes, written by James Tinney in the 4th, with art by Eric Donovan and colors by Dee Kniff. This iteration of this miniseries, Eugenic, told the story of women are unable to give birth. And so in order to, like, basically stop the hate that humans inflict on each other, a scientist unleashes a virus that, yes, allows women to start procreating again or being able to give birth. In doing so, all children conceived will now be like these freaks of nature.
Yeah.
And the idea is that, like, evolution will basically be so ugly that racism won't exist anymore and people won't start killing each other over the way they look.
Yeah, because everyone looks the same, but different. Like, they're all big, weird purple monsters. And they're, like, more... They need to eat less and sleep less, and they're more... They're bigger and stronger and all this kind of stuff.
As it turns out, you know, in the second issue, we saw that what few actual humans are left on Earth have kind of been, like, sent to live in, like, third world conditions, and they lead a revolution against the Newmans, as they're referred to. And then we jumped 200 years after that, and this very, very, very good issue, even though it was a massive exposition dump in parts where it kind of told the entire story of what's happened in this world. But basically, it's the whole issue is from the point of view of a museum worker who works at a museum that's dedicated to kind of, like, the failures of this eugenic experiment and why maybe it wasn't as good as, like, everyone's been programmed to kind of think it's great, and you know, now all art is created by robots and all that kind of thing, and everyone views humans as like, you know, these horrible hatred-filled people that loved wars and stuff like that, and the humans are so much more advanced than that. But in gaining that, we've lost so much of what made us special. And it ends in quite a shocking way that I wish this would continue.
Yeah, I love this series, and I feel like it was one that really rewarded you for reading it month to month. It read really well in single. I think it will still read well in trade, but I really enjoyed reading this every month
because
it wasn't like you had too much to remember. They sort of, every issue was pretty standalone.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just think it's such a great, great concept, so well executed. I think the art's incredible.
Great character designs too. The main character, this one with his mouth on his forehead. I love it was awesome. Really, really, really cool miniseries. And I'll definitely be tracking down the previous ones by James Tynion IV, Eric Donovan, and Deacon Eve through Boom Studios.
Loved it.
Also through Boom this week was, through their Kaboom All Ages imprint, was Rugrats issue number 3, written by Box Brown with art by Lisa Dubois, Carolyn Nowak, and Eleonora Bruni. This is the kind of comic book adaptation, new stories basically featuring the beloved Rugrats characters, in which Tommy Pickles and his friends try and take on the technology that their parents use to monitor their every movement throughout the day. It's like, you know, somewhat of a biting satire, very, very, you know, gentle satire on how addicted to phones and that kind of thing we've become. But I thought it was really strong and good, and the art's wonderful. And
I hope, because this is the final issue of this arc, I hope Box Brown does a couple more arcs.
Yeah, true. Because, I mean, undoubtedly we're going to get more issues of Rugrats. But
whether it's the same team, like
these two in particular, Lisa Dubois does such a good job of, like, you know, they look like the characters, but it's still her own style.
Yep.
Coming through.
I love this.
Yeah, this is great, great. If this is the first trade, these first three issues, that's a must buy if you have any love for the Rugrats series, or, you know someone that's like, you know, 12 or no, what's the perfect age for this? 8?
Yeah.
I don't even know. And all ages, I guess.
All children.
But yeah, this is awesome. This is like probably the best licensed comic that I've read since the Flintstones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good fun.
Real great shit.
Loved it.
Valiant this week put out the third issue of Eternity.
So many books about like parenting and like children and parents losing their children this week.
I need that escape, Siobhan. I'm not getting it from my comic books anymore. Matt Kint, Trevor Hairsine, Ryan Wynn, and David Barron, a big creative team on this book, which is the kind of fourth in the what was it called before Eternity?
Divinity
series that they've been doing for Valiant. The child of the main characters from Divinity, who I guess has some crazy powers, has been kidnapped in order to save the universe. And it looks like now we're going to be seeing husband pitted against wife.
Great.
It's really, really cool and unique, and I love seeing Abram's story. This is one of, like, yeah, it's... I think Matt Kint lost his way a little bit on the Exo Manowar book he was writing, but it's good to see. This is clearly like his shit.
Yeah.
When it comes to Valiant.
I think like this is such a good book, and I think you could almost read this without having read the Divinity series. It is definitely improved by having read Divinity, but this is such a cool concept. I like how big he's going and how weird and meta. I think this is great.
Yeah, it's like accessible Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
Yeah, like still dealing with very big, broad concepts, but doing so in a bit more of a personalized way.
Yep.
A lot more heart than Morrison puts in his sometimes.
I don't know. I think Morrison has a big, gooey center.
I think so too, but sometimes when he goes full, meta, huge concept, sometimes he kind of leaves the door. I read issue number 165 of Usagi Yojimbo by Stan Sakai through Dark Horse this week. This is the finale of the Mousetrap little arc. Mm-hmm. And that means that as of issue 166, you're reading.
Great.
Because, he's basically just telling these short little stories. And all you need to know is that the rabbit is a samurai.
I've got that covered.
It's just like classic Ronin stories. There's, you know, betrayal, there's thieves, but there's honor among some thieves.
Hell yeah.
And then there are like different gangs. And this is just, you know, I feel like you could say you've read one Usagi Yojimbo story, you've read them all, which I guess is somewhat true, but it's a great story. And Stan Sakai's artwork is brilliant. And it's a story that I like reading over
Absolutely.
And over again.
It's one of those books, like, it reminds me of like really long running manga series, like Tezuka's Blackjack. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, I have like 20 volumes of that on my shelf, and I'm always like, do I need them? But each story is so incredible that, yes, I do need all of them. Shut up, Nate.
Yep, it's real good. Shut up,
Stop trying to get rid of my manga.
Did you read Long Lost issue number 2?
Yes, I did.
Out through Scout Comics. This is the cool and strange, like, horror-ish kind of
yet
book.
Another like creepy Tumblr horror thing. Tumblr horror.
Written by Matthew Ehrman with awesome unique art by Lisa Stirl.
Beautiful art, and I love it in black and white. I love black and white comics, guys.
So a sister returns to visit her sister, and there's lots of like kind of unsaid things between them.
Mm-hmm. Weird family shit going on.
And meanwhile, then there's this like it's dark presence of monsters that may be targeting one of the sisters. But this issue ends with them alone in the woods with a broken down car. And that always ends well in horror movies.
Yes.
So I don't see why that would translate badly for our characters in a comic book.
Absolutely. Agreed. I love this. I think this is like really unique, really atmospheric, really uneasy feeling. I think it's like clever. I love the like sister relationship. I think that's really spot on. Made me miss my sisters.
And then there's like, you know, it's very, very good at kind of like talking about like of using the language of horror. We'll just suddenly cut to like a tableau of like there's one part where you see like a bunch of hooded witches drop a heart into a well. And then it just cuts away. That's not explained at all. And we get back to the story. It's great.
Yeah.
It's really, really uneasy, unsettling kind of imagery. Yeah. Interspersed with like a, you know, a family story.
Love it.
Yeah. Looking forward to seeing where it goes next.
I'm not a horror person in general. Like, I don't like horror movies. They make me really uncomfortable.
Horror comics.
But I love horror comics. I think it's because you can read them like at your own pace. So the scares are less difficult. I also read Misfit City, which like, I just don't even want to talk about the story because I kind of lost the track of what's going on. I just want to talk about what a good cartoonist Naomi Franquise. Anyway, she's incredible.
Frankie.
Just the character designs are so good. There's so much differentiation between the characters' faces, which is not something you necessarily see that often. I love it. I want to see more from her, but I've just kind of lost track of what's going on in this series specifically.
Yeah, I agree with you. That first issue seems so uncomplicated and it just kind of got very lost in the story pretty quickly. It was unfortunate because it was a great start to this series.
And I love the characters
me too.
In it. I just don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
I also read issue 4 of Lazaretto. Did you read this?
Talked about it last week. You were right in front of me.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was good.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's a great series.
So horrifying. So much horror.
This is the one where the...
this was probably the most horrifying
thing
I read.
I told you how grim it got.
Yeah.
So this is like the one where like a bunch of kids start out of college and a virus breaks out and, you know, kind of hints at them turning into zombies and it's gone even one step further.
Yeah.
With them losing their skin.
Yeah, all of the zombies have lost their skin and our heroes get like crowd surfed to the main bad guy's room by a sea of horrible skinless zombies. Which is like, this is the thing, like if that was a movie, I would be like, this is too far for me, I can't deal with it. But in comic form, I'm like, this is too far for me, I'm going to continue reading.
Yeah.
It is incredible. And horrifying.
It's a great book. It's one of the cool surprises of the last year, I think.
Yeah, Boom are doing incredible things at the moment, I think.
And the new image, Siobhan.
Yeah,
I could go out there and say it. Boom, the new image.
Good. I think you should stick to that.
Yeah, good. And Image are the new...
Vertigo?
Yeah, sure. And Vertigo is the new...
Zenoscope.
Okay, great. We did it. Chasing Hitler, issue number 2 of 4 through Red 5 Comics.
You already made a joke about that being Chasing Amy's sequel, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
yeah, never mind.
Red 5 Comics are the new... You want to take a stab at that one?
Kevin Smith. I don't know.
Perfect. But I'm sold on this as a premise just because of the title. It's called Chasing Hitler.
It's great.
How could it not be good? The first issue was not good, unfortunately.
Yeah. Was the second issue good?
Yeah, it's getting better. They're actually chasing Hitler.
Ah, finally.
But that's the extent of the review. I'll let you know if they chase Hitler even more in issue 3.
Nice.
So that is it for the show. I would go through like all the books that you should pick up next week, but you've probably already got them by the time you're listening to this.
Yeah, it's too late.
For those of you that were like, God damn it, they've forgotten all the comics that they were talking about, don't worry, we're recording at the end of this week.
Yes.
So we'll be a lot more clear of what we're talking about.
Yeah, this week was confusing for me because I've already started reading this week's comics.
I didn't. But I've been on like six flights since I started reading the comics, and I read them on various flights, and then
hectic.
I DJ'd to different crowds, and then I lay in the beach for a while and forgot everything.
Good.
But this is still fun to do, right? It's fun to listen to, right?
Yeah,
right?
Come on, guys. You still good, like us, right?
We'll be back next week with reviews of this week's comics.
Yes.
And then, like, honestly, by the end of January, all will be well. We'll have to do one massive action-packed catch-up episode.
Mm-hmm.
We might have a special guest or two to help us
get through it all.
Get through it all, yeah. But it'll be fun. Stick with us, Serious Issueites.
Mm.
I won't never call you that again, sorry. but you can find us online, facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast, or join our group, which is facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast. You can find us on Patreon and support us, kick us a few bucks, and get some extra bonus episodes from us there at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. You can find us on Twitter, serious_issues, or individually at levdog, levdawg, that's me, and Siobhan is at Siobhan CBG. And you can send us a good old-fashioned email to seriousissues@kingscomics.com.
Yeah. I mean, you could even send us a letter. Send it to Kings.
Siobhan's phone number is
555-555-5555.
Sounds legit to me. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you send Siobhan a text, and see you next week.
Bye, guys.
Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.